You displayed people that were thinking. And as we know, thinking is not loud. But we're talking about text and subtext. If you were supposed to look at your own piece, would you imagine, would you turn the thoughts into sound in the head, in your own head? So is that a silent piece, or is the sound produced in the one who looks at it? How would you want me to look at it? Am I adding the sound to it?
I guess so, because especially as I, at the end of the video, where it gets completely dark, I think it's more or less reminds me, again, a little example. from my music school, I had to go, I was like 10 years old, like long distance, 1 kilometer, and often in the winter it was very dark, and you can't see anything. And then I could hear a lot of sounds, and I guess it was more just telling my experience before. This person, you can see it, and you can see the eyes and mimic. If you can at first a little bit see, is it sad thoughts or is it something intense? And then when it gets dark, it's just continue to hear your thoughts instead of hearing, kind of catching the person's thoughts. So you just change the role.
Mm-hmm. Is this why the piece is so long? I mean, almost with every piece you presented, you said, oh, we can't listen to all of it because it's so long.
I guess not really, because I shoot it in the summertime and the sunset is very fast. If I would do it in the winter time, no, it's slowly. If I would do it in winter time, it's just, and that's all.
Yeah.
I mean, also, it's obviously I chose, I guess so, because it's, yeah, it needs to have time.
Yeah. You said, although you played the violoncello as a kid,
yeah.
You did play the cello, huh? But you said you're coming from the visual arts, that's your education background. Is that true? Like a very general question is, how did sound get into your work? Why, was there a special point where you thought, well, although I'm trained as a visual artist, there should be something else to it because that's an element I want?
No, as I mentioned before, it's because I all my inspirations basically comes from sound. I really carefully, I could hear, and then I just give this visual form for that. Almost, there's really rare or seldom when I see something and then I want to get impression. More, it's always listening, a lot of listening, and then becomes an object.
But you're presenting pictures, photographs as well, isn't
that? Also,
isn't that true? But what is their connection to sound?
Very strong. I mean, like I have a vision of how sounds, what the sound is of really of patience. So I try to. At first, I try to. I have this sound in my head, and then I draw it or make an image of it. But first of all, this is a sound, and then it's a shape. And also photographs, I have the sound, and then I try to understand what it is, what kind of form, how it's traveling, and what the objects, and is it going up or down, and this how it comes this visual part. So the first is a sound.
Maybe we can just jump back and forth and go back to your lecture, which gave us an historic overview over the development of a sound art, actually from one single source, that was music, as far as I got you right. Your first example was Eric Satie and his Musique d'Ameublement. That is not the only source for sound art. Is that your point of view, that sound art is a development or comes out of music, per se? That wasn't your point, I know, but maybe you get this.
This was This was the title of the lecture. I was hired this way.
Okay, okay.
It was a commission.
Okay, give us the other perspective now, please.
No, of course. I mean, there is this this other tradition that comes from the change of or the art forms aren't fixed entities. So at certain periods in time and history, certain art forms emerge, other art forms might not really disappear, but you know they are not really in focus anymore. And there were times when we call it the Kunstsynthese, so this idea that art forms just come together and there's just one thing people consider art. And I also have the impression that the whole notion of sound art is a rather historic thing. So,
Say it again.
It's a historic thing. It's thing of the past. I think sound art was invented in the 1960s or 70s. And in our days, most artists that we traditionally consider sound artists claim to not be sound artists anymore. So like Rolf Julius says, I'm an artist, and I do drawing, I do video, I do installation, I do sound installation. Yeah, and so it's really that in the history of the art forms, this focus emerged and it also kind of disappears, and now we have this this big area in scholarly work where people are doing sound studies and focus on sound and focus on listening and all these things, where the media of sound or the material of sound is established as an object of observation and which is different from music and the tradition of music. But that's again something else. And I have the impression that, well, maybe it's not really fair, since I'm a trained musicologist, that this perspective from musicology is still a very powerful way to discuss these art pieces. Because we are used to not just focus on some rather unprecise impression or, you know, describe a piece, but we are used to analyze things. And there was this time in the 1980s and 1990s where people were always saying, okay, sound art and sound installation art is mostly about the self-awareness of the perceiver, and we listen to our listening, and the very fact that our perception changes depending on the location in the room is we just become aware of our bodily appearance in the space and all these things. But so what? I mean, that's not enough for art. I mean, this is like saying, okay, there are colors and we can do painting. But I have the feeling that we reach this point where we have to do more Kunstrichterei, so we really have to judge pieces, and we really need to say, look, you're doing this and this approach, or you're following this and this approach, and I can easily say there are, you know, like five different artists who are doing more or less the same thing. What's the point? I mean, I'm not saying you should not do an Alvin Lucy approach again, because I'm not saying you should not do a string quartet after Nono or whatever. But still, I have the very strong feeling that we reach this point where all this notion of the novelty of things, that things are new, this is just gone. And we really should focus on the quality of the work, and I think part of the quality or part of the criteria of the quality of a work is how the work relates to the canon of established pieces in this realm. And how does a young artist connect and relate to existing strategies in the same field? I'm not saying people should not use ultraviolet light after Christina Kubisch, but it's obvious for everybody, you know, who has certain knowledge in this field, if I experience an installation where ultraviolet light plays an important role, I see some connection to Christina Kubisch.
But I mean, every time you listen to a string quartet, you hear Joseph Haydn, don't you? And that goes on for 250 years now, and they've been pretty fruitful.
That's what I'm trying to say, that we reached this point where this is the schoolwork we have to do now. I think that theorists are now invited to really work on this question. What's the difference between a technique, a personal style, a procedure that relates to other pieces that used the same procedure before? Is this necessary? Is this, you know, this kind of interconnecting and working within a discourse when art is produced? I think this is the work in front of us.
I am just sitting and thinking about, I think it depends very much on how you see, how you understand life and how you understand time. I mean, if you see life as a, or like a sort of evolution as a linear thing, I think you can say, okay, they did this first and that would make it more valuable. I think if you see things as happening all the time, that has been proposed many times, it's not how we look at time today, of course, but if things are happening all the time, we gotta judge more, if we wanna judge, about the quality of the work. As you say, quality of the work, what defines quality of the work? I don't think I need, as an artist, to know too much about, oh, now this has happened, now that has happened, therefore I can't do it. I don't wanna bond myself to that, you know. I think it's up to critics to talk about, okay, Jakob's work is sort of, it's really relating to blah, blah, blah. But if I start to think too much about what they have done, what that had done, and what category I fall in, if I'm a sound artist or not, I'll die. Because, you know, I just wanna create what I like to do and not to define, okay, this is sound art, or this is, now I'm like a visual artist or something. You know, of course, I think I acknowledge it's very important to talk about sound art. That's why I'm here as well, because I think I like to talk about it. But I'm also a little bit, I want to be careful, being an artist myself, to talk too much about my works. I'm happy to talk about my inspiration and why I do things and what was important for me and what I hear what you're doing. You know, it's like, why are you, you know, doing these things and what inspires you? But never. What context we are in, that's up to somebody else to say. You know, so when I use strings, it's because I want to, and I would never not do it just because somebody else has also used strings, because I believe I can do it in a unique way. And if somebody says I don't, then it's up to them to judge, you know.
Well, I don't want to tell people what to do and what to not do. I'm just saying that people, from my understanding, really need to be aware of the context they're working in. And that's it. And there are artists who just enjoy making reference to other pieces and consider this part of their artistic practice. And then there are other artists who just pretend to be naive. And then there are artists who are plain stupid. And still, they might create great work. Yeah. But from my understanding, I mean, the fact that this art form is not new anymore, it's not fresh anymore, you suddenly have this notion of context. I mean, these years are gone. I mean, you know, we are just 50 years now with sound art, and you just have to face the music. I mean, it's
super fresh. I mean, MoMA just did the sound art exhibition that I'm participating in. Thank you. Yeah, I think so too. But I think at least they're trying. You know, why is it awful? I mean, that. What do you mean it's awful? You know, an exhibition, MoMA is trying to do an exhibition. It's been very easy for people to judge and say, now MoMA is trying to do a sound art exhibition. You don't know how to do sound art. We know. I mean, I agree that it was not an exhibition that was really covering the whole spectrum of what's going on. But can you explain why it's awful?
Well, I mean, it's... Maybe this was a too spontaneous reaction, but...
Yeah, but it comes from somewhere.
Like yeah, some of course. Kind of, I mean, of course. I mean, it's
a negative just feeling that went.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there is this institution thing, and from my understanding, at least the history of sound art is very much about institutional critique, and these two just don't go together.
So should they rather not do a sound art exhibition?
Well, maybe they should just offer the money for people to do sound pieces that are not necessarily presented in a place that's certainly not appropriate for sound pieces.
But I think what I saw is that they are trying to tell their audience, people who are what we call it the gray gold or whatever, or the people who go to MoMA, many of these maybe don't listen so much. Who knows, because there has not been presented a lot of sound art for the MoMA people. Now there's one curator who tried to sort of say, okay, she wanted to do her, what she liked or what she thought was relevant for her. I agree that maybe I would have done it differently. I know I invited some different people, but that's not up to me to judge. You know, I can always, everywhere I go, to every festival, every exhibition, I could brag about my own opinion, but I gotta accept that this is what she tried to do in this big, heavy institution called MoMA. I believe it can be a start for something, you know, to say, okay, there is something called sound art. Of course, a lot of people said, well, there has been sound art for many, many years, which is true. But at least they are trying, and I feel there's a lot of sort of negative feelings about them trying to do it. You know, it's I don't feel so scared about it. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, that they can do an exhibition, they can invite me in, I'll do my piece. Great, you know, I move on to something else, you know, and I don't want to sort of let myself sort of be cramped into, oh, MoMA is now being threatened by that. Because there has been a lot of these reactions from different people, like, oh, why, they shouldn't do that, and so on. I don't think it's gonna harm anything. You know, I'll do my stuff no matter what, who invites me. Or don't invite me.
The question is more how they speak about their own experiences or exhibition.
The creators. Yeah.
Well, it was the first one there, and for most people, it was the first one they ever saw in their life. So that's.
I understand some people get offended. You know, if you've been working all your life with sound art, and then like MoMA says, this is the greatest, and then it invites some dude like me who's just only 38 years old.
Yeah, I mean, it's more about telling people we found out that sound art.
Yeah, but then it's just.
Which can be even at MoMA.
But MoMA.
In general, the things happen another day, but not there.
I just think we're stronger than MoMA, you know? Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, we'll just do our stuff. They invite us in, some of us, fine. You know, we keep doing our stuff.
Well, and I think one thing is the public relations of the institution, the big mouths that are trying to promote their exhibits, and we might be able to forget about them. The other thing is the institution itself, which still, there is no alternative until now to the museum, unfortunately. And even, I think this is not, just doesn't only apply to sound art. There's been a lot of art being established since the 60s that is criticizing the museum, and it is in the museums. Like I think the other day we were talking about, it was Dieter Roth. He was he was doing this chocolate sculptures, and he knew that there is bugs that you almost can't kill, and they will just, you know, eat the sculptures. And it was, of course, all against, you know, just buying something precious and then you preserve it. That's what museums do. And, you know, the bugs, they keep on, you know, eating the sculptures. And I mean, museums bought these sculptures and now they're trying to kill the bugs because they spend so much money on those chocolate sculptures that even though they understood that it's all about decay, they don't want it to happen because they invested so much money, and I can't even blame them. So I don't think that's really, I don't think that's too new, but I get your point. If your point was that apart from that there's so many other things that happened in the field of sound art that has not been covered by the museum because a museum per se can't cover that.
Well, it's just, I mean, who, I mean, did anybody ever see a successful group show of sound art, installation art?
Yes.
At MoMA?
No. I don't think it was a successful show, but I think it was a great approach that they tried to do it, you know. But I was in the show, and I think that was a successful show, not just because I was in it, but it was called Silence, and it happened at the Menil Collection in Texas, and it moved on to Berkeley Art Museum. And that was both a retrospective show. There was Duchamp, there was the box that you mentioned, or who mentioned it? Yeah, and yes, and there was Kristen Markley and myself and a cage and so on. So it was a beautiful line of works from that embraced the whole history, but of course from a selection from the curator, you know, Toby Camps, of his selection. But I liked to be part of that because it didn't only say, oh, there are a few youngsters here who did something, or like, as Barbara London did at MoMA. It was a very young show. She maybe didn't take her... MoMA is such a heavy institution, you know, so she should have taken that more serious. You know, it's like, okay, sound art, let's embrace some more genres into sound art.
She did a show in 1970.
I noticed that many journalists got into this sort of saleability of their art pieces, of sound art, whereas New York Times just 4 days ago put out this article where they also interviewed me and other artists, like, what's the saleability? Can you sell your sound art? Mm-hmm. And I guess, I don't know what to think of this, you know, because that's, of course, the visual art context.
I don't know, I've got this feeling we're getting off the tracks, although I don't know where the tracks actually are, but maybe am I the only one to have this feeling?